Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Rebecca Williams is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California. She is the owner of Inland Empire Couples Counseling and specializes in helping mixed belief and religious secular couples have connected, intimate, and united relationships. Rebecca is working on an online course for helping couples thrive in mixed faith marriages. She's offering a free mini course to help couples set the foundation for their united mixed belief relationship. So we will include the link in the chat. And again, if you're on YouTube, it will be in the description. So welcome, Rebecca. We are so, so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. So how have you been? I mean, I think the last, what was the last one that we talked about? The mixed belief couples, I think. Talk
another one after. I was on the therapist Q&A.
It's been like a month
or more. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I get to see some of the YouTube numbers, and there are a ton of comments, and it is a heavily watched video. So I feel that talk that you gave about the mixed belief relationships has been very helpful for people. Very, very helpful. So thank you for doing that, and welcome back.
Thanks. I'm glad to be back.
So what are we going to be talking about today?
We're talking about, the bigger topic is boundaries, but more specifically, how do you respond when you get the offers to pray for you, or your family's giving you religious gifts, or you have that friend who just keeps inviting you to things that you don't want to be invited to.
Like church functions and such. Yeah, you know, I'll be perfectly honest. One of my biggest pet peeves that I'm still kind of working on is when folks say that they're going to pray for me, because I see it as an atheist and a complete non-believer. I see it as praying does absolutely nothing. Whereas maybe calling up someone or calling me up on the phone or just sending me a dropping a note, either in, a text or a greeting card, to me, that is so much more effective than saying I'm going to pray for you. And it drives me nuts. So I'm really grateful to be talking about this today, because I hope I can be better after it.
Okay. No pressure though.
No pressure. So do you have any like examples that, from your own life that you can talk about this or?
Yeah, we're going to go lots of examples, I think, woven throughout the talk today. I wanted to start with just a little brief intro, but like, why is this so hard? Mm-hmm. Why is it that when someone says they pray for you, that it like has the spark of anger, frustration, or defensiveness to it? I think part of it is that it's because of our own history, right? It's different than if your friend who's really into Comic-Con or Ren Faire invites you to go to that event.
Yeah,
it makes sense, because I, for example, don't have that feeling, like that reaction, because I don't think no one has ever told me that they're going to pray for me. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but that's definitely never happened. So I'm not sure how I would react, but I don't think it would be anger. I think you're right, Rebecca, that is related to your personal history of how you have associated the praying or any other action, really, that right. Someone else is doing for you.
And it depends, I think, on your relationship with that person, too. So, maybe it feels like a rejection of where you are when you're already feeling alone and trying to figure out what your new life without religion looks like. It might just touch on those tender places or, traumatized spots from the past that these requests just really kind of push on that. And that's why it's painful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's experienced as a request that you change, or like an invalidation of what you've experienced. Like, I know you don't believe in God anymore, but I'm just going to tell you that I'm going to pray for you anyway.
Yeah, it feels almost sometimes, it feels disrespectful. And other times it feels passive aggressive, completely passive aggressive. Yeah. Like exactly like what you said, you know, I'm an atheist, you know, I don't believe, but yet you're going to still do what you think is best instead of something that would work for me.
Right. And there's really like a missed connection there, or that there's a lack of empathy, just in the way that you phrase it, Eric, that it's about what is actually going to be good for you, my friend Eric. It's about what I think is going to be good for you.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what my parents did when I was a kid. I don't want to go to the doctor. I don't want to get this flu shot, but they know it's good for me, and so they're going to do it. And so in some sense, it feels patronizing for, the pendants out there.
Right. So like, in short, it's a violation of boundaries. That's why we're talking about this in this context. And I will say up front, some religious communities are really not good at boundaries. And so you might have to do some educating, and you may have to reinforce your boundaries multiple times, because it could just be an unfamiliar topic. I think I have an example later that's going to hit on that more directly. So then what do you do? That's the whole thing. Okay, this is what happens, but what do you do? How do you respond when one of these things comes your way? So quick understanding of what we're talking about with boundaries. Boundaries is like the space, it's the space between the two of us. It's understanding where I end and where you begin. What stuff is my stuff and what stuff is your stuff? It's also teaching other people how to treat us, and it's teaching them in action what type of relationship we want to have. I want to give a non-religion example for this, because it's not only within the context of an atheist and a religious person that we have to set boundaries, right? So I have a friend who has kids that are my kids' age and their friends, and this family was getting ready to move, and she asked if I could have the kids over to my house to play for a little while so that the parents could do some like packing and prepping. And that was fine. And then when she came to pick them up, I, you know, asked how it went, and do you want to bring them over again sometime? And she said, yeah, but I don't want to step on your toes. This is us negotiating the boundary. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm happy to do it. And you can ask as many times as you want. And I promise you, I'll be honest with you, and I'll tell you if I can't. So you can ask me, and I will be honest with you and tell you, no, it's not a convenient time, if it's not a good time for me to have these kids over to my house again. Mm. And in that case, she was thinking the boundary was like somewhere out here. And I'm saying, no, actually, you can come quite a bit closer. I'm comfortable with that. But like, trust me that I won't let you cross my boundary. We'll talk about what is comfortable and not comfortable.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we all kind of grew up with this golden rule, like do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, or as you do unto yourself, right? But that it almost seems like that rule is failing in some sense. I've heard that it's a modified golden rule, or the platinum rule, do unto others as they'd want to be done unto, or it's much worded much better than I put it, but that seems to be almost kind of allowing for boundaries and trying to understand the other person that you're wanting to work with much better than understanding yourself.
Right. That's perfect for here too, because your religious family or friends, the response they might want is, I'll pray for you. They might be following the golden rule and treating you the way they would want to be treated, but that doesn't work for you.
Even if they know that you're an atheist, would they still rather you pray for them knowing that you don't believe in God?
I have no idea. You'd have to ask that person.
Okay, because to me that sounds like
pray. That would bring you back to God. You prayed and you felt something. I don't know.
Anyway. That's fair. Yeah, that's okay.
But it's like the platinum thing. It's like, take it one step above and really find out what is the other person want here, and educate people about what you expect and what works for you and doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I broke this down into some steps. I can't remember now how many steps there are. four, maybe five. We'll see as we go.
We can insert a variable X here or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. So the first thing, my first suggestion, step one, is decide if this relationship matters to you. If you don't care about the person or preserving the relationship, there's a lot less work to do. Hmm. You can just ignore it. You can politely refuse their invitation, or you can like unleash your rage on them if you want to. Burn all the bridges, whatever. You don't care about preserving this relationship anyway. That's, you know, pretty straightforward.
Unleash the rage.
I don't know.
That's great.
Yeah. However, if the person in the relationship do matter to you, or there might be some unwanted consequences from just releasing your rage, then you've got a little bit of work to do with the boundaries. Okay, so the second, my step two, is to get clear about your internal boundaries. And this is where I'm going to get real, like, therapist-y. Okay, so.
Good, that's why we,
that's why you got me here, okay.
And Maya and I are definitely not experts on this. We need to hear from you.
So what this is, like, inside, you have to get clear on where you stop and where I start. Okay, so, like, I don't have to take in everything that you're putting out there. This might come, I know it came in for me and my transition out of religion. I got accused of being angry. You're just so upset and you're angry about everything. And I had to stop. This is, you know, me doing the internal boundaries thing. And like, am I angry about some things? Yeah. I haven't actually displayed any of that anger towards this person or in this context. And so I think that their perception of anger, that's like their deal. That's not actually me.
Hmm.
I don't have to take that in and respond to it because I don't, it's not true. Am I making sense there?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe the person who said that to me had an expectation that now I'm an angry atheist. And so they are interpreting everything through that lens, but that doesn't mean that it's true of me.
Like every atheist is angry then. And so that's kind of what your friend thought perhaps. And so now that she knew you were an atheist, she viewed you through that lens?
I think so, yeah. Or just an expectation that like, oh, you left the church, so now you're going to attack the church.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though I hadn't actually, we hadn't had any of those conversations. I wasn't attacking the church to this person or in front of them or anything. But it's like they were braced for that and were throwing all these things at me. I'm like, nope, that's not actually true. I don't need to upset myself with it because that's your stuff and not my stuff.
Mm-hmm. But how can you put that emotional boundary if you do care about the person? You know, bringing it back to the step before, like if it's someone that you care about, like your mom or your friend or whatever.
Yeah.
How can you, you know, so deal with that?
We're going to get there in one of the later steps about what you actually say or do to the person. But I think that that's the first place that you have to start is being clear with yourself. Mm-hmm. Is what they're saying true about me? Or is that really just their stuff and I don't have to, you know, take it in? This might also be the case of like a parent who maybe sacrificed a lot to bring you up in the church. And they may have a lot of disappointment, anger, grief about your leaving the church. And this is another place where you can be clear about that's real for them, but that's also, those are their feelings and not my feelings. I don't have to take that in.
So because perhaps I didn't live up to my, let's say my mom's or my dad's expectation of being a fantastic Christian for the rest of my life, I don't have to necessarily take that on. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, or yes, you don't have to live with that guilt. Or maybe your parent is really disappointed in you and you might tend to like, I don't know, withdraw into shame and feel all of this guilt about I caused that or I need to do something to fix it or something like that. And maybe some of your changes did cause it, but it doesn't exactly mean that it was your fault that you were going out trying to make your parent feel awful. If that makes sense. It's also not necessarily your responsibility to fix it. And it doesn't even mean that you can't have a good relationship with them, or that they hate you because they are feeling something. It's just being really clear about, like, that's that person's feelings and these are my feelings. And there's a separation there.
That sounds like it could potentially be a pretty hard conversation to have in some sense, but that risk may in turn have a huge reward in the sense of saving the relationship that you care about.
Right.
Okay.
Before we're even talking about it, though, we're just getting, like, you inside yourself being clear about, like, that's my parents' feelings, that's my spouse's feelings, that's how this other person feels about me, and it's not my responsibility to fix that in them. That's maybe the part that I'm not fully, I feel like I'm talking around but not saying. It's not your job to fix the other person's feelings. That's their feelings. Your job is your actions, your words, your responsibility, your feelings. Those are the things that are within your control.
Yeah. And I guess this also applies to, as you said before, not only in religious context, but just this in any boundary. Like if you're setting a boundary, fair enough, you have to be kind about it, I guess. Correct me if I'm wrong. but you're not responsible for the other person getting offended by it or thinking that you're a bad person for it or anything like that.
Right. Right. I wasn't even planning on using this as an example, but we do this with kids all the time. You have to set a boundary with your child and say, no, that's not appropriate, or no, you can't do that thing, that's not allowed. And because we're their parents, the kids need to, or we have an expectation that they respect that boundary, but it doesn't mean they have to like it, right? Your kids still might be really angry and upset with you. They might think that you're really unfair, whatever, and that's fine. They can have those feelings, but they still have to do what you told them to do. Or it's still not appropriate to do that thing, or you have to say no, they can't go to that event, or whatever it is.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we actually do some damage to our kids in invalidating them when we don't allow them to have their feelings. When we tell them, no, you can't do something, and the natural human response is that they feel anger or disappointment, and then we're mad at them because they're angry at us.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, yeah. And what when it goes the other way? One, what about when the kids set a boundary with you? So for example, a really common example that I think happens a lot is a kid doesn't want to go to a birthday party because whatever reasons. Do you think we should respect the kids' boundaries of not wanting to go? Do you think we should make them go? Is that too much of an abstract question? Maybe it depends on the kid, the other kid, why they don't want to go, blah, blah.
I think it depends a lot on the context. If we're talking a birthday party that's like for their cousin, or you're going to grandma's birthday party and the whole family is going, we might be able to say something like, I get that you don't want to go. We're going to all together as a family, and so you kind of don't have a choice about this one. I'm sorry that you don't have a choice. Maybe there's a way that we can make it work for you, right? If it's just a friend from school and they're invited to a birthday party and your child says, I don't want to go, you might explore with them why not. Maybe the other kids aren't nice to them, maybe there's something else going on at the same time, maybe whatever. But I would lean towards on the side of like, respect the kid's boundary. They don't want to go, they don't want to go. Yeah. I think, but absolutely we should respect boundaries on body autonomy though. If the kid says they don't want to hug someone, if the kid says, they don't like to be tickled or they don't want to be touched in a certain way or whatever, I absolutely think that those are things that we should respect even in our own children. If they say, no, I don't want to hug or I don't want to kiss. I do that with my kids. I ask them, oh, I love you so much, can I give you a kiss? And if they say no, I'd say, okay.
Okay. So the child was talking or setting a boundary and then you didn't cross it. And so that kind of does apply to setting boundaries with other adults and in relationships that you care about too, by making that clear. But you're talking about having it first, make it clear within yourself. Okay.
Okay. So let me give some examples of this because I scrolled down to my outline and realized I did have an example. Okay. So this happened last summer. My kids got invited to vacation Bible school from a friend. My initial response, because I come from a religious tradition that's like heavy on proselytizing and like heavy on trying to convert your friends, I got all this anger coming up, like, you want to invite me? Like, what? Huh? No, we're not doing that. Like, how, all the things that go through my head, right? Like, how awful that they've sent their little kid to try to convert my little kid. And but I stop and realize there's another explanation to this. Maybe this kid just wants to be friends with my kid and is inviting them to something. Maybe the kid doesn't really even want to go to Vacation Bible School and they think it would be better if they brought along a friend. Maybe it doesn't have anything at all to do with crossing my boundaries and trying to proselytize us. I have to recognize that a lot of that response in me, that's my stuff.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily that this 10-year-old is being super disrespectful and inviting my child to an event, right? So I can recognize and own that, that that was a big deal because of my past. Those are my issues. Or maybe something's a big deal because you were hurt in a certain context, or there's some issues that just matter so much to you. Like, that's okay. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. I just want to encourage you to be clear about part of why this is a big deal or why I'm having a response to this is my own stuff. These are because these are my values or that's my history or whatever. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the other person sees it the same way as you do.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have to have our shit fully together in order to start piecing some of these boundaries, you know, one by one. It's not like I will fully know myself and then I can start on my boundaries, but it sounds like it's like one at a time type of thing as we kind of discover things about ourselves.
Absolutely. And sometimes you don't even know that a boundary has been crossed. You're not able to articulate it until someone does something and you go, oh, I didn't like that. And then why? What didn't feel good about that? What did I not like? And then you can get clear about, was it something in the, what the other person did? Was that just pushing on my buttons or my sore spots? And then you might decide to do something about it. But absolutely, some of the stuff you figure out as you go. There's no way to know until you go into the experience.
So then setting boundaries is an introspective type of exercise.
It starts that way, yeah.
Okay. That's the, like the very first part.
Yes. Yes. I think that you're going to be inconsistent and probably not effective if you're not clear with yourself first. Because then you're not, if you're not clear with yourself first, you're just reacting to things that are happening around you rather than living from a place of being clear about your own values.
That makes sense.
And if someone is not great at introspection, because that at the end of the day, it is a skill, can you recommend any specific activities for people to explore their own boundaries and to, you know, understand where they come from? Is there any like specific things that they can do?
That is an excellent question. I love journaling for this. And it could be, you know, writing in a diary or typing in a Word doc or talking into the voice notes on your phone or whatever, but some kind of activity where you can be free to just explore. Hey, this is what happened. This is what I thought. This is how I felt. Whatever. You can get some clarity. And even there's something in the brain about using the language processing part of your brain to understand your experience that helps you get clarity. Mm-hmm. Because that happens in different parts of your brain. And so that's why I recommend something, whether it's talking it out, writing it out, something where you're not just thinking about it, but you're actually forcing yourself to put that into language. That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. I also like any kind of mindfulness practice or meditation where you're just getting still and looking at what's there without judgment.
I love that tool that you're using language, whether it's writing or speaking. I love that example because that's exactly what we see in the support groups, and that's what we see in the helpline too. It's more more than just helping to create boundaries too. It's part of the underlying clarity as well. Yeah, I love that. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's why sometimes you need a sounding board, or ideas come to you when you're talking it through with another person. You go, ah, there's creativity. You get some insight there, because your brain's working to integrate the different parts there, your experiences with your understanding, the emotional part of your brain with the logical part of your brain. It's all good stuff.
So those are my emotions. Those are like the things that are coming up in me. And then the things that are coming up in other people, oftentimes I'll take them on too. Like, oh, it's my fault, or mm-hmm. I did this, but I'm hearing you say, knock it off.
I mean, you don't have to. You don't have to take responsibility for how other people feel, or to take responsibility for needing to fix it for them. Yeah. Okay. So that was, I think, step one was decide if the relationship matters. Step two was get clear on what's going on for you internally. Step three is decide if you're going to say something or if you're going to let it go. There might be sometimes with some relationships that you decide it's just like either not worth your effort. You don't actually care that much to tell this person, please don't say you're going to pray for me, or please stop giving me those invitations, right? There might be some that you just don't want to put in the effort. Maybe you recognize you've done all the work. Like my vacation Bible school example, I recognized my reaction to that was totally me and had nothing to do with this little kid. And so I didn't need to say anything to her. Right? Like, she's just a little kid.
It almost sounds like you're suggesting pick your battles.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Yes. Maybe I'm not that close with the other person and I just don't want to. Or maybe these requests come for that particular person infrequently and I decide like, meh, not worth it. Another real life example, parent of one of my kids at a birthday party or something says something along the lines of like, oh, isn't it great that all the kids are such good friends? We're so blessed. God has blessed us. All right. I don't necessarily have to say anything to that, right? I could just, don't you agree? Oh yeah, we're real lucky, right? Maybe it's not that important. But when that same person starts sending me multiple messages on Facebook, encouraging me to pray about something with some kind of religious conspiracy theory things, like that might be a point where I say, okay, this is past just benign. And maybe I need to say, I'm not religious, so you don't need to send that stuff to me.
Okay.
Just because you have boundaries and you have values and whatever doesn't mean that you have to stop someone from mentioning religion every time that you are in the room. I don't think that anyone actually lives that way, but I'm being a little extreme for the purpose of making a point.
I noticed in myself that as I became more and more comfortable and confident in my own brand new belief system, that I would do that. I would argue quite a bit and be angry quite a bit, but over time, I think like inadvertently, I've began to understand my own boundaries and understand what is important to me, and have seemed to be choosing my battles more wisely than I did back then. So it seemed like things, like I chose something at the beginning to continue to pick as many battles or fight as many battles, but they changed the priorities and the boundaries sort of changed over time. It didn't stay the same.
Yeah. That might have actually been part of you doing that language processing thing and figuring out what do I actually think about this? And you get clearer on it as you're having those conversations with people. I found that a lot of the clients that I've worked with who've gone through this process of leaving religion, they sometimes get to a point where it just is exhausting. They find that having those conversations, at the beginning, maybe I was getting a lot from it and it was really good for me. And then after a while, it just is draining. And so I'm going to decide to let a lot more stuff go. I'm mm-hmm. going to decide to really pick my battles because I find that I'm not getting as much and it's taking a lot out of me.
Yeah, and it's probably also toxic for the actual relationship if you're just constantly arguing about religion. When if you didn't, you may actually have like a good friendship or a good relationship, even if you believe different things. So yeah, that makes sense.
Right, that's perfect transition to the step four, which is to actually set those boundaries with the other person in the interest of preserving the relationship. Because here's the thing, right, is if you don't set your boundaries and you just let yourself get walked all over, either you walk away from the relationship because it disintegrates because it's not working for you, or there's just like tons of resentment that builds up because a person's constantly crossing your boundaries and you're not telling them. So yeah, it actually is in the interest of preserving the relationship that you let someone know, this is how I'd like to be treated, or this is what is and isn't okay for me. So yeah, the setting the boundaries, like that's where we do the communicating about, or the communicating with the other person, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a few tips for that as well. The first would be, as much as you can, ask for what you want and what you need in positive terms, rather than asking for what you don't, or ask for what you need rather than telling people what you don't want. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So like,
yeah.
Like an example of a great example of what not to do might be something like, I hate it when you do this. I hate it when you do X. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So you know, let's say that someone keeps inviting your kids to stuff. Maybe it's your parents who keep like wanting to take the kids to the religious events. You could say something like, can you please check with us before you extend those invitations? I would like you to ask me as the parent before you invite my kids, rather than stop pushing your church on us. You're telling them what you do want. So, I want you to check with me before you push religion on my child.
We have a example in the chat. Like, I need a hug instead of a prayer.
Yes. I love that. Or to go back to your example from earlier, Eric, I need a hug. I would really love for you to give me a call, mm-hmm. to send me a note. Like, could you check in on me? That would be more helpful to me than prayers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These conversations initially for me were scary. Like it took a lot of time to formulate the response. And then there was a whole sense of fear of like, what if I get yelled at? What if I get rejected? What if this doesn't go right? How could I build up the courage to kind of approach this?
I think you can start small. You could maybe start with things that seem easier to ask, or you could maybe even start with relationships where there's less on the line. You might practice setting boundaries with your coworkers before you go talking to your mom.
Yeah. So someone maybe on Facebook or whatever that I'm okay if the relationship goes sour, and that's like and I'm sure like me, I can think of several folks that I'm okay if the relationship is lost. And so I could practice on one at a time and wouldn't be that big of a deal if they were gone.
Mm-hmm. And if you're also worried about the wording of something, I think that the support groups are a great place to come with people who have been through this and can help you out. How do I word this in a way that sounds like this is what I want and not what I don't want?
So you're saying use the whole sounding board skill to also formulate a response?
Yeah, if you need to, like you check in with someone else, talk to another person that you trust who can help you figure it out.
I like that.
Yeah. And this is true for all types of relationships. I tell the couples that I work with in my therapy practice the same thing. Like, if you can be clear with your spouse about what you do want, rather like tell them what to do rather than what not to do, you'll get a more positive result from them.
Yeah, because then the person doesn't have to necessarily guess at what you do want. You're actually telling them, okay, I can.
You're also not activating their defensiveness. Mm. So when you tell someone, stop doing this, don't do that, I hate it when they feel attacked or criticized, and the natural response is for that person to respond to you with defensiveness. And so you can just completely bypass that by saying, please do this.
I can totally relate to that, because my instant reaction if I'm arguing with my partner is just like, just don't do that, you know, just stop doing what you're doing. And I should probably start doing more like, I'd rather you do, because it also leaves the conversation on a more positive note. So it's not, it doesn't have to be argumentative.
It doesn't have to be. And it's, I mean, works with big things and little things too. It's so much, I mean, I'm having a hard time with the words today. It is easier for a person to respond to, will you please wash the dishes after breakfast, than like, stop leaving dishes in the sink. Mm. You're essentially asking for the same thing, but you've just phrased it more in, oh, I would like you to do something for me, rather than, I don't like the way that you do that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, in some sense, a little, it's neat, because, so if my wife said, Eric, you leave dishes in the sink, and I would like you to wash them when you, before, you know, instead of leaving them in the sink. And then I have an option of saying like, you know what, you're right, because I value that relationship. Or I could be a jerk and say, screw that. They just magically get washed, and I have no idea. So how that happens, you know, I could be a jerk, or I can actually, it really kind of puts me on the spot if it's approached that way instead. Yeah. And instead of having to defend myself. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the first tip, is ask for what you want as much as possible. If you can say in positive terms, so what you do want from people rather than what you don't want. My next tip is to be generous in your assumptions. So especially when we encounter one of these things that feels invalidating, or that feels dismissive, or even pushy, you know, that someone's wanting us to come back to church, they think that we've been deceived, and they're, you know, whatever, pushing for those things. Be as generous as possible in your assumptions of what the other person is trying to do and what they mean by it.
Mm-hmm. So try to be optimistic that they are trying to help you and be friends with you, or have a positive relationship with you, instead of just taking it in a negative way. Is that what you mean?
Yes, exactly. So the reason for this is that it's better for your relationship for you to presume that the other person loves you and cares about you and wants nice things for you, and maybe just was a little clumsy in what they said, or they forgot, or they don't know, or whatever. Like, that's better for your relationship. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that you will be happier. You will be a happier person if you go through life assuming that other people are doing the best that they can, than if you go through life assuming that everyone is against you and people are your enemy.
So give them the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the other thing is that when we don't know, sometimes we presume, we guess, our guesses might be close, but you don't actually know what someone else is thinking. You don't. And our brains will fill in the gaps. They're really efficient at that. Point A, point B, we create a story that fills in between. And sometimes we're wrong. And our worst case scenario thing is probably wrong anyway. And just, this is like my atheist secular people, I know you're hurting and I love you, and you also might be primed to see these things as worse than they are.
That kind of goes to your earlier example about your kid being invited to a vacation Bible school too. Yeah. Because you mentioned how your brain went to a different place, and then you stopped yourself and started to apply some generosity to your assumptions, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. And I see this in couple relationships all the time too, that we fill in the gaps and often come up with worst case scenario type things. Well, you said that because you think this about me. And when we actually check it out, the person was just distracted and thinking about something else. It wasn't even the thing that you thought that it was. So
I've had that happen too, where I weave this entire story and putting their motivations behind it. And then when I find out what their real motivation was, it was like so much simpler and nothing I could have even thought up. And I was like, man, that was dumb of me to do.
Okay. So that's not to say that sometimes people do have the sinister, judgy, you need to change motivations that we fear that they do, right? Like sometimes that's true. And you should at least check it out before you jump to that conclusion.
How can you tell the difference though? How can you, you know, think, well, I'm overthinking, they're being nice, it's just me, or they're actually being like, not evil, but you know, but
right.
Yeah, how can you tell the difference? Because that must be quite hard if you know, it's only you experiencing that relationship and you're not gonna talk to them about it because obviously you don't want to create an argument.
I don't know if you were doing this on purpose or not, but that is like exactly the perfect transition for the next tip.
I promise I'm not.
Brilliant sake. I love it. Okay. So the next tip is to talk about the impact on you and not your assumptions of their intent. So this is where you are essentially checking out your assumptions. So when someone says, you know, invites you to something or I'll pray for you or whatever, and you go, I just don't like how that felt. You can ask them, is this what you meant?
Goes back to communication again.
Yeah. Is this what you meant? That's how it sounded to me. Is that what you meant to say? And if they own it and say, yeah, then okay. But you're giving them the opportunity to clarify if what you thought they meant isn't what they actually meant.
And again, this can be somewhat scary to do at first. And so we can practice on some lower value relationships, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, I have started to do that on Facebook too, to get some clarification on what somebody had said. And it has made all the difference. Like I'm angry, like I'm going to get this guy or get this person. And then I type in, can you explain further what you mean? And they can't hear my angry voice on the other side of the keyboard. But when they explain it, and it's like, God damn it, I don't have to be angry anymore. This makes sense. And I can talk from that clarification, rather than my initial assumption.
Yeah. So I have an example for this one about talking about the impact on you and not your assumptions of their intent. So my father-in-law was talking to my husband, so my husband and his dad, right? And my husband said he just kept having this experience over and over that he felt like his dad was using every opportunity he could to talk to him about church. Mm-hmm. And this was after, you know, in the year or two after my husband kind of came out to his parents that he wasn't attending and not believing anymore. And it was like, it just really felt like every time they talked, his dad had some way to weave in, well, see, son, you need to understand this. And, you know, here's this other thing and let me teach you about this. And my husband's lucky in that he has me to be the sounding board person. And so it kind of worked out what he was going to say to his dad. And what he ultimately came down with is like, Dad, I noticed that you've been saying these things, keeping it factual. This is what you have said to me, not assuming his intent, right? I noticed you've been saying these things. When you say that, it hurts me. It feels like you're not believing what I said or that you're trying to change me. So he's talking about the impact that his dad's actions have on him and not like, stop trying to change me, Dad.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Amaya.
In your experience, and I don't want to like put you on the spot, but do these setting boundaries work, as in the other person responds okay with it, or do they freak out? Because I know that when someone sets a boundary on you, it's also, you can feel attacked by it, because it's even if you're not, it doesn't have to be specific to religious, it's just any person, if someone sets a boundary with you, it's just not a nice thing to receive. So in your experience, do people react positively or negatively to setting boundaries?
I think sometimes it depends on how you say it, which is why I have these suggestions about what to say and not to say and being generous. And I think sometimes it depends on your relationship with the other person. And there are some people who just don't react well to boundary setting. And that might not have anything to do with you and how you say it. They don't want to be told that they're wrong. They just like can't, their sense of self is so fragile that they can't take in the idea that they've hurt someone or that they did something wrong. And so I'm not going to be, you know, unicorns and rainbows here, that you're going to say these things and it's all going to go great. And there's going to be no hard conversations. And nothing will be awkward. Like that's not realistic, but I think that if you have a good relationship with the person, if you're clear about, I want us to have a good relationship. And I mean, in the case of my husband and his dad, he said some stuff in there too, that was like, I love you. I want to feel close to you. And I need you to know that when you say these things, they hurt me. He's even prepared that from the setting of the boundary that I'm doing this because I care. I'm doing this because I want to feel comfortable being around you. And if you keep doing it, I'm not going to want to talk to you as much. Yeah, oh, okay. So and like credit to my father-in-law, he responded really beautifully to that. Mm. Like, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to hurt you. I didn't mean to hurt you.
It sounds like then the father-in-law sort of, you know, I'm imagining this, evaluated the relationship that he had with his son and his feelings he had towards his son, and chose to respect his son over his own old behaviors. And that's pretty beautiful in my sense. It's like your husband, all he had to do was sort of say this, and your father-in-law was willing to respect that.
Yeah. And like in that situation, in that particular relationship, like let's be totally honest, I don't think that my father-in-law really changed his views. Like he really believes in his faith and wishes that his son would come back to church.
Sure.
Like that is true. And coming back to the boundaries thing, like we can't control what he believes and how he acts. And we can set a boundary that says, this is how I want to be treated. And kudos to him. He's chosen to respect that.
Got it.
Yeah. But again, in the interest of preserving the relationship, you're going to get to the point faster and avoid a lot more arguments if you can talk as much as possible about yourself. This is how I experience that, rather than this is what you think about me. Because when you're talking about the other person, they can discredit that and say, that's not what I think, you've misinterpreted, that's whatever. But if you stick to, when you said this, I felt that, this is how I experienced that thing, that's a lot harder to argue with.
Yeah, and it's also putting less blame on them. And not that you're putting it on yourself, but it's more like that is the consequence of you saying it. It's not your intention. So it could be easily accidental that you made me feel that way.
Exactly. And it's an entirely different story if, you know, my husband were to say, Dad, it really hurts me with you when you say these things. And his dad was like, yeah, I know. And if you would come back to church, it would stop hurting. Like, oh, all right. That tells you something about where the boundaries lie for him and how close you want to be to him and whatever. Right? It's because it's not a one-sided thing. In relationships, you're negotiating the boundary between the two people.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. The next tip is to turn up the volume on love, which basically means just be explicit with people that you're doing this because you care, or that I really want to have a good relationship with you. I want us to be able to talk openly and honestly. And that's why I need to tell you, I don't like when you say these things, or when you extend these invitations, it impacts me in this way. Or you might believe what you believe, but please stop telling me that I'm deceived. That it's really upsetting to me. I don't want to hear that. But you're doing that in the context of, I love you and care about you. The next tip, which I'm not really following the chat, but I see the little things pop up. So I think someone's talked about this already, is when you have to say no, offer an alternative. So, you know, maybe you're invited to some event that happens at a place of worship or a, you know, a church building or something, and you don't want to go to that thing. If you say, I can't come to that event at the church, but I will come to lunch at your house afterwards. Thank you so much for the invitation. Thanks for coming to the wedding. I don't feel comfortable attending the service that happens at the church, but I would love to come to the reception. Is that okay with you? You're offering an alternative that still values the relationship you have with that person.
Yeah, it must be less personal. If you're not rejecting them, you're rejecting the specific event they're inviting you to. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And so when it comes to prayer, an alternative could still be offered, like what the chat had recommended. Hey, I'd rather have a hug, or I'd rather have a card sent, or a phone call or a text. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So you're saying no to the religious part, but not no to the person and their caring about you.
And so it seems like this alternative helps to make the boundary even clearer, like painting and sort of allowing the person to give you some respect and care by if they take advantage of the alternative that you provide.
Exactly. Okay. Next tip is to reinforce healthy boundaries whenever you can. Also, don't speak for others and don't assume. It's all kind of is lumped in. And it'll make sense when I give the examples. So I think this is especially true of mixed belief couples. So let's say you're, the extended family or the people at church invite you to some event. We would want the religious spouse. I gotta remember I'm talking to the not the other side, right? your response might be something like, I don't know, you'll have to ask my wife. I'm not going to speak for her. Even just that one statement is reinforcing a healthy boundary that there is a difference between me and you and that other person over there. I can't speak for them.
Okay.
Or, requests from the parents to, can we give the kid a Bible? Can we, get them to the religious classes? If they say that they want to go to the church, we'll pick them up and we'll take them and whatever. You can reinforce healthy boundaries by saying something like, let me talk to my spouse about it and we'll decide and get back to you. So you're reinforcing there that like, okay, you've said a thing and I over here can take all the time that I need to think about that. I don't get to decide unilaterally for me and my partner. But or even if one of these requests takes you off guard and you want to say, I don't know what my answer is, let me take some time to think about it. That's reinforcing a healthy boundary.
Mm-hmm. So it's just honest communication, as we have said before. It's always the key.
Would reinforcing the healthy boundary also sort of acknowledging when someone has respected the boundary, came up and gave you a hug instead of a prayer? Is that part of the reinforcing the boundary too, in a positive way?
Yes, absolutely. When someone does something that you experience as awesome or being really respectful, tell them, oh, I really appreciated the way that you asked me. I appreciated that you asked me if you could pray for me, instead of just assuming that I wanted it. Thank you. Thank you for asking me first. And no thanks, I don't need the prayers. but yes, when you, that's exactly the point. When you see stuff that you like, and that works for you, tell people and you'll get more of it. It's part of teaching other people how you want to be treated and what type of relationship you want to have with them. So the next tip there is to respect others' boundaries. And we kind of talked about this a little bit already. Treat them how you would like to be treated or how they would like to be treated, I guess. And I think that in the early stages of leading religion, people often kind of muddle through this a little bit and sometimes don't do a great job, where we maybe want to talk to everybody about our newfound atheism or secular humanism or, you know, whatever worldview we're kind of ascribing to, but we don't want to hear it from them. And so in mixed faith families or mixed faith couples, I really encourage people to think about this. If you want someone else that you love and care about to listen to how you believe about something, you also have to be willing to listen to them.
So you're saying it goes both ways. It's not all about me. Is that what you're saying? Because I'm having a hard time hearing that.
This was an important boundary I had to set with my mother in my own transition, where I told her essentially, I will have conversations with you about these issues, but I want it to be a conversation. I don't just want you to preach at me. I'm not interested in that. And so if you want to talk about it, I also want you to be open to also hearing what I think about a particular issue, whatever the thing is.
I can get behind that.
Right. But sometimes, I mean, let's be real. Like sometimes it's hard, because if you open that door, then are you also, you want your loved one to read whatever book? Are you willing to read whatever book they want you to read?
If we're respecting other people's boundaries, I'm kind of envisioning that we can take a look at what they're saying, what the boundary that they're creating, and almost sort of turn that around and say, this is how people are viewing me, or this potentially is how people can relate to me, is when I am setting my own boundaries. I don't know, maybe that doesn't make any sense, but I'm kind of maybe trying to, when someone sets a boundary with me, I'm trying to turn that into like, how can I do the same thing? Or how does that look from the outside, from other people's perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that boundaries and relationships even always have to be exactly the same. You just have to know where they are and communicate them with people. So I have an example for this that I don't know if will be appreciated or not appreciated, but let's talk sex. Okay. If there's one person who says, I just don't do oral sex. Don't want it. Don't want your parts in my mouth. Like, I just don't do that. They can set that boundary. And I think if you set that boundary, you have to be willing to say that that means I'm also not going to receive any oral sex, because it's quite unfair, right?
Okay.
But there might be a couple where one person, where it just is a sort of imbalanced relationship. The one person says, sorry, I don't do blowjobs, but you can give me oral sex. I'll receive it. I'm just not going to give it. And if you're okay with that, then okay. So it doesn't always have to be a quid pro quo type situation. Clear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to have the same boundaries. It can be flexible.
Yeah. So the other person in that relationship, in the sex example, if that person is like, okay, I understand that I can give freely, but I have no expectation that you will reciprocate, because you've been really clear that that's not something you will do. Mm-hmm. And if they understand that and they are okay with it, then all right, what does it matter? As long as the two of them are clear and they're both like accepting that this is all right.
Yeah. And surely you can also, if you are like giving in that aspect, you can also make it the other way around in another aspect of your sex life. Like, it doesn't have to be always 50-50. Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. So yeah, I think this is where the golden rule thing kind of breaks down a little bit. Like, you for relationships to be healthy, everything doesn't have to be exactly the same on both sides, but you have to be clear about it and that both people have choice in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm clear that this is how I want to be treated and I'm willing for you to treat me in the same way.
Yeah. And what about when someone consistently breaks the boundaries? Like you keep telling them, you're doing all the steps right. You're saying, I'd rather you do this instead of don't do that. Mm-hmm. But they keep just breaking them. What can you do?
Well, I think that's going right into step 4 and 5 of my setting boundaries thing. So step 4 is to reinforce the boundaries when they're violated. Because sometimes people just don't know. Or you have the conversation and they go, okay, yeah, that sounds right. I can do that. But then there's a disconnect when it actually goes into practice. And so you might need to say, remember that thing that we were talking about? This is it. Oh, okay. Thank you for telling me. Right. So you might need to give them a reminder. And being firm in that doesn't have to be mean. I think a lot of times when people talk about setting boundaries, we come at it really kind of aggressively. We're like ready to fight, and it doesn't have to be that at all, especially if you're talking with somebody that you love and respect and who you know loves you. You can be gentle but firm. Remember I said I didn't. Oh yeah, right. You can say that without being argumentative.
I guess you can also discover that you're not willing to do something for someone else, even if you said you did, if you haven't done it before. So that's also negotiating boundaries, which
Yes, thank you for bringing up. That's an excellent point. You might agree to something and then go ahead with it and be like, oh, actually that didn't work out, and you can go back and renegotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Part of why you need to reinforce boundaries, especially with religious people, is because of what I said at the beginning, that sometimes religious folks like aren't good at boundaries. They aren't, healthy boundaries aren't modeled within those communities.
Mm.
And so you might come from, I'm a former Mormon, so those are the most of the examples that I know, where like people just come to your house. And if there's a person in your local congregation who is your bishop and they're like allowed to ask you pretty much anything, and it is not part of the culture that you're allowed to say no.
Wait, they just show up at your house and they expect to be let in?
As an introvert, that is my worst nightmare. Like,
yes, yes.
At least text me first.
Yeah.
Could you show up, please?
And they give you an assignment. Okay, this is the volunteer job that you have in the church, but the cultural expectation is that you don't say no. And so people are allowed to ask you to do something, and you don't get to say, no, that doesn't work for me.
Oh,
that's horrible. Jeez. I can't imagine.
So then when you leave, so you've been a part of this group and you leave that group, and now you're over here being like, no, that doesn't work for me. No, you can't ask me that. No, you actually don't have any authority over me. I don't have to answer your questions. People might not respond to that well, and it might not necessarily mean that they're being an asshole. It might just mean that they have no idea. This isn't a concept that they're comfortable with. And so you may need to gently but firmly remind them that, like, this is where my boundary is. This is what is and is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So a person coming out of...
Blow your mind.
Yeah, I mean, the person... I get it on like a completely different level about how the world could seem so much different for different. I came out of Baptist and I understand what that's like, but I don't understand what it's like coming out of Mormonism or Jehovah's Witness or Islam. But I can totally see how, as an ex-Mormon, they have no idea necessarily what boundaries are, or even it would be difficult for them starting as an adult to understand how to set boundaries, and or even that's a thing. That's got to be tough.
That's actually why I started with get clear with yourself internally first, because I think even with our coming out experience, that a lot of us have an expectation that we need to explain. I need to give the whole story to everyone who knew me as a religious person of what happened to me and why I believe the way that I do. When those people might not actually be entitled to that information from you. You could just say, I'm not answering that. Or this change happened to me. Or maybe say nothing to them. Yeah. That's getting good and clear with your boundaries.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, if someone says, you know, how come you left the faith? You're not obligated to say that. You're not obligated to tell them. And that's a part of setting the boundaries.
Yes. But okay. I think a lot of us have some anticipatory anxiety about that. Mm. How am I going to respond? And we don't know what we're going to say. And sometimes it doesn't occur to us that you could say nothing.
Or I'm not.
Or you could say,
talk about it.
Yeah, that's personal.
Okay.
I don't want to answer that question. Or this just doesn't work for me. Yeah. Someone from the church wants to come visit you. You can't say no.
I like that. Yeah, I like that you were saying it doesn't have to be mean, and you're not, the way that you're talking about this, it's not coming off as mean at all. It's just being clear and firm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I have a personal example of this that's a little bit funny, if you want to go with it, the Mormons and boundaries thing. So it was my daughter's birthday party at my house. And we had lived in that particular place for a couple of years, but apparently word had just finally received the local Mormon congregation that we lived there now. And so they thought we were like new move-ins, and we were hosting the birthday party around the back. And we had signs up for the guests, like, hey, welcome to the party, come around to the backyard, whatever. It was on Sunday afternoon. And these two guys from the church with their white shirts and ties just showed up at our house, saw the balloons and the signs, just walked around in the back. And we're like asking the people, where's the Williams? Who here is them? Like we're here from the church. And I was friendly with them and talked for, no, actually we don't need help moving in. We've lived here for quite a while. We just, you know, don't attend. Thank you very much. And the thing that was so eye-opening to me was a friend of mine who wasn't raised in religion was appalled. She was like, I cannot believe that they would just come in here like they were entitled. They would just come in here and take your time like that. Didn't they see the signs? Like clearly an event is happening here that they're not invited to, and they just showed up. They showed up without calling. Like my friend was all angry on my behalf. And I was like, I guess that is kind of a pretty big violation of boundaries.
Yeah, because if it was any other person, if it wasn't religious, you would be like, what are you doing in my house? Just get out. You're not invited here.
But it was so normal to me within the context of that culture, because that's just what Mormons do. And that's how they treat the people of their congregation, that it didn't read to me as this huge boundary violation until my friend who didn't know the context was like, what was that? So all that's to say is you can firmly, gently set the boundaries, and it doesn't always mean that the other person is trying to be awful to you. They just might be coming from a context or culture that they don't know that that's a violation.
You need to be understanding of what's on the other side too.
Okay. Step five, this is the last one, which goes back to your question from before, Amaya. And it's realize that this isn't all on you and that your relationships might change. So you might do all the things perfectly and find that your friends and family just won't stop. They won't or can't respect the boundaries that you're setting. And sometimes this is sad. Like we lose relationships that we valued, or we find out that maybe we weren't as close to people as we thought that we were. And that can be disappointing and sad and hurtful too, to lose those relationships. If you have someone that you don't lose the relationship entirely, you might just become more distant. Like, wow, this person consistently doesn't take no for an answer, or they just can't not talk about these things, or they keep violating the boundaries that I set. And so I just don't want to spend as much time with them, or I don't talk about things that are as personal. And so our relationship, like the nature of the relationship, shifts and changes. And that might not be entirely on you. Right? It takes two. You can set the boundary. You can respect their boundaries. You can be kind. You can be polite. You can be generous in your assumptions. And all you can do is your part. If the other person isn't willing to meet you in the middle and negotiate with you, then that relationship might have to go, or it might look very different than it was before.
And I guess this must be extra difficult if you don't have any secular friends that you can relate to and you can tell on.
That can be the real lonely part of the transition.
So it sounds like setting boundaries, it can also be an exercise in finding out who your real friends are, finding out who really cares about you and who will really be there for you. And so it's almost like if I'm starting from scratch with setting boundaries, I can consider, am I willing to lose some of these? Is it lose some of these relationships if it doesn't work out, or if their real self comes out and they don't only care about themselves?
Yeah. And I think part of it too is just like deciding on the nature of the relationship and getting clear about that, because there might be some people that you're only really acquaintances, your coworkers, your neighbors, whatever. And so you might set some of these boundaries and the relationship will shift a little bit, or maybe you decide you don't need to get real clear with them on certain things because that's just not the nature of the relationship you have with that person. Okay. But yeah, there might be other places where you want to have a relationship with that person that is open and honest and where you really can be your full self and you don't have to hide important parts of yourself and you don't have to pretend that you're a believer if you're not. If that's the kind of relationship you have with, or that you want to have with that person, then yeah, maybe it's worth it to take those steps to say, hey, this is what's okay and not okay.
Yeah, because it sounds like on the flip side of that, you'll also find setting boundaries may make the relationship even stronger and healthier too.
Yes.
More than you expected. So it's kind of a neat tool to weed out some folks and get some stronger relationships too. That's cool.
Yes, man. Definitely. And I will say that I have really close relationships with some religious folks who are great and totally respect my boundaries and I respect theirs. And it's like, that doesn't get in the way of us being good friends and really supporting each other in important ways. I think that sometimes we can get into a sort of black and white type thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that I do.
We don't think it's possible to have close relationships with people who are religious. And so we just, we can be equally dismissive to them as we fear that they would be to us.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
And it's really powerful when you do that. In my personal experience, it was with veganism because I turned vegan a couple of years ago, but most of my friends and family are not. And they don't even think about it or anything like that. So it was like, I went through, you know how there is like an angry atheist phase? There is also an angry vegan phase. I had to get like over that.
Yeah. And that's why there's jokes, right? About people who are vegan and win a whole day without telling anyone.
I mean, I'm doing that now. So I guess there is a point to the jokes, yeah. But yeah, it was a really like learning process of, you know, your friends are still your friends. They just have different beliefs as you, and that is okay. You don't have to hate them. Everything is fine. You can still love them. And yeah, it's really a powerful thing to realize it and to learn how to deal with those feelings. Yeah.
Anything else, Rebecca?
No, that was what I had prepared. I'd be happy to take some questions. I know I put some resources to share in the chat.
We have a few questions already. So okay,
awesome.
I'll take the first one, Eric, if that's fine with you.
Absolutely, take it away.
Okay. So the first person says, I would like to hear more about how to deal with passive aggressive aggression. Sorry, that made absolutely no sense. I'm going to read that again.
Okay.
Okay. 2:30 in the morning here. I just trying to stay awake. I would like to hear more about how to deal with passive aggression and also more about how a secular sense of a higher power can be problematic.
Okay, so two questions there, two parts to that question. I'm trying to think of an example. I do better with concrete examples.
Yeah. But,
so I was a lot of folks on Facebook know me as an atheist, and there's a couple very evangelical folks out there. And when I put a request out, hey, I need this done. If you could send a nice GIF or a nice note to so-and-so because they're struggling, then the response is from some of these evangelical folks is, I'll pray for them, I'll pray for you. And it's very clear that what I've asked for was completely different than what they're offering up. And so it feels very passive aggressive. Or when I have a conversation with someone about and it's almost like a debate-ish or a conversation about religion of some sorts, and we talk both sides of it. When it gets to the end and we're not in agreement, they will say something like, I'll pray for you, that you'll come back to the fold or what have you.
Okay. I think there's two ways that you can deal with passive aggressive comments. The one way, maybe three ways. One, you can just take it at face value and respond to it at face value, knowing that you are not responding to what they were actually meaning to say. And then it sort of puts that awkwardness, the double bind, back on them.
Sometimes I will say something like, this isn't what I asked for, or this isn't where the conversation was going. Why are you saying this?
Right.
I feel being passive aggressive about this.
Yeah, I think that that's the second. So one thing is to just take what they said at face value and what did you mean by that?
Okay.
Oh, so you're saying this, even though you might know that they're being kind of passive aggressive, but you're just going to take the words that they actually said and put it back on them, and then they have to own what they just told you.
Got it.
The second thing would be to make an effort to get clear at the real meaning of that, which I think is what you were just saying, Eric. So are you saying this? Is that what you meant? Or that really isn't what I asked for, right? You're getting, instead of taking it face value, you're going at what the intended meaning is.
Yeah.
And then maybe the third thing is to just kind of play dumb, let the other person have to explain what they mean.
Got it.
That's my advice.
So
it's hard to do without a real concrete example.
I'll read this straight off. Okay. Any tips for dealing with people who seem to have a pretty high level of denial in regards to the effect their religion has? My mom swears up and down that religion helps her, but she's miserable all the time. I feel like she doesn't see reality or think about things logically.
Mm. Okay. That's hard because it's your mom and you care about her and want her to not be experiencing these harmful effects of the religion.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think the best thing that you can do is just live a great life. My experience is that when you directly try to challenge people on their beliefs, you activate their defensiveness and you don't get anywhere.
And it seems like it goes back to what we talked about, you're not responsible for other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You love her. And so you want her to feel happier and to not be experiencing all of these damaging effects, But if that's what she wants to believe and she's not open to being convinced otherwise, there might not be much you can do about that.
So
you might be able to tell her, I love you. I have found a lot of, I'm talking about yourself, I found so much happiness. I found so much relief from guilt. I found, you know, you could introduce some other ideas, but at the end of the day, you can't change her. She has to decide that she wants to do that.
So perhaps a tip might be to identify this feeling in yourself and maybe express it to the person, but understand it's ultimately their life.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to deal with your own feelings as opposed to mm-hmm. dealing with somebody else's.
Yeah, that's getting really clear on your own internal boundaries. That's okay. My mom's stuff is that she is in denial about how much her religion is hurting her. That's not my problem, that's her problem. And I love her, and I want her to not feel that, and I can't change her. That's a good, solid internal boundary.
That's all the questions that we've got.
Okay.
Yeah. This has been a great, fantastic discussion. Rebecca, thank you so much for sitting down with us and taking the time to talk with us about this.
You're welcome.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, Healing, and Support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.